Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's harvest season for all kinds of garden produce. There's more produce to come in the next month or so. This hour, we'll talk about harvesting and storing your garden vegetables. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, will join us in a few minutes to answer your questions, but we're going to start the hour with Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, as we talk harvest time. Hello, Ajay.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And this is really the peak of garden season. There's so much good stuff out there.
Yeah, you're very correct, Charity. Many of our listeners, home gardeners, are harvesting a bounty of tomatoes, peppers. Harvest season has begun for squashes, you know, acorn squash, butternut squash. Beets are still a little bit longer. I mean, there's some more time. Sweet potato on the same board, but otherwise, you know, I'm sure folks would have also harvested onions, potatoes, melons. So definitely, it's a very colorful time of the year with a lot to harvest.
Well, and of course, some of those vegetables, like tomatoes, you either eat them right away or you process them because they're not going to keep very long. It's also pretty clear when a tomato is ripe. Is there, with squash, are there any tricks for knowing when it's time to take some squash off the vine?
With the squash, typically, you know, these squashes which we grow, for example, let's say acorn squashes, these are anywhere from 70 to 80 day crop from the time you put them in the ground. So in order to understand the maturity of the squash and when it's ready to harvest, one thing to look for is that the rind or the skin of the squash will harden. It will become hard. That's one. You will also see, especially in, you know, for example, table ace, which is an acorn squash, you see that the there's color change where the squash sits or touches the ground. It becomes either yellowy or orangish in color. So that's a good indicator that the squash is ready.
All right. And then when the squash is ready and you pick it, you're not going to be able to eat all that squash right away. And hopefully that's one of those fresh garden flavors that you get to keep with you well into the cold months. So what do you do to make sure that you can store your squash and it will be good when you get to it?
Sure. That's true. I mean, some of these squashes can be stored as long as 6 months. And that's typically true for the buttercup types. So if you look at the gradation in terms of the length, they can be stored properly. You know, acorn squash, about 1 to 2 months. Butternut, anywhere from 2 to 3 months. And buttercup can be more than 3 and up to 6 months, provided we harvest them properly and we store them properly. So when it comes time to harvest acorn squash, butternut squash, it's always advisable to leave about 1 to 1.5 inch of a handle on those fruits. That helps to limit any kind of fungal or bacterial infection that can go towards the stem end. Oftentimes, we see that if we harvest too close to the stem, that area starts to rot. So having that a small piece of stem, 1-1.5 inch, definitely helps. So,
all right, it looks better too if they're going to be decorative.
That's true. It definitely adds some aesthetic value to the fruit as well. If we are planning to consume them quickly, great. You know, fall is a good time for soups. They can go in many other dishes. But if the plan is to store them for longer, then we suggest that growers and listeners, gardeners, should cure them. And when I say curing, it's exposing those harvested fruit for about a week or so at relatively higher temperatures, so about 80 to 85. So for a homeowner, you know, it could be somewhere outside in a shaded area. Don't let them out in direct sun because that can lead to sun scald and other rotting issues. But about 80 to 85 and relatively higher humidity area. So if you leave them there for about a week or 10 days, that's how you cure. One thing which is very critical to know is that you can cure buttercup squash, you can cure butternut squash, but it is not advisable to cure the acorn squash because once the acorn squashes are cured, there is a tendency in them that their storage quality actually starts going down. So it is better for the acorn squash not to be cured.
Okay, so then once you cure the buttercup and the butternut and you don't cure the acorn squash, then you need a place to store them inside your home. What are the ideal conditions to keep them as long as possible?
The ideal condition to store these cucurbitaceous crops would be anywhere from 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit. They need to be in a cool and a dry location. That location also need to be well ventilated because we do see many fungal diseases that can creep in when there is lack of ventilation. And another thing to be careful about is don't pile them. It is always advisable to put them like in a single layer. That way there is enough air movement between all the fruits.
All right, and maybe not pushed right up against each other?
No, that's true. And not push against like a wall or some other structure either.
All right. I'm not sure how many of us have that ideal space in our homes, but I'm sure a lot of people have something that sounds like a nice, well-ventilated basement space would be perfect for that. Let's talk about sweet potatoes, which I know are one of your favorite things to grow. And as you said before, it's not quite time to harvest the sweet potatoes.
That's true. Typically, the sweet potatoes are planted in our state somewhere around end of May, beginning of June, when the danger of frost is completely over. And many of these sweet potato cultivars, for example, Beauregard, Covington, Evangeline, Georgia Jet, these take about 90 to 110 days to mature. So typically, sweet potato harvest happens in mid-September, like beginning of September, like 10th of September. That's when we start harvesting them. And it doesn't mean that you have to harvest before the first frost. Oftentimes, you might still have the sweet potato outside, and there will be a first light frost that comes 10th of October or 15th of October. We suggest that once that frost comes, it's definitely time to harvest them now. Don't keep them exposed to cold temperature for a longer time because the roots don't like it and they won't store that well.
All right. And of course, that's something that you just kind of have to go on faith that things are going okay down below the surface.
That's true. And again, if you know when you planted and if you look for that 90, 110 day, and many of the cultivars will come with the dates, how much time it takes. So roughly in that time frame, I usually give about a week, 10 day extra, just because, our growing conditions are not as optimal as what the sweet potatoes would like, the excess heat. This year, we didn't have much of those hot days. The goal is to make sure you harvest them before the frost or just after the first frost.
All right. And then once you harvest those sweet potatoes, how do you store those?
So for sweet potatoes, if you can use them immediately, like fresh, that's okay. But actually, the real taste and the quality of the sweet potatoes improve when they are cured. And curing for sweet potato, again, they need to be exposed to a higher temperature. We usually shoot for about 85, 90 degree Fahrenheit, high relative humidity, about 85, 90. I know it's very difficult sometimes to accomplish those, in our homes. But trying to keep at least in mind that, we need high temperatures and high humidity. Is some kind of a lath house outside that will help so that there is no direct sunlight that's hitting the roots. And one of the reasons why we cure is that during the curing process, any of the wounds, the bruises, the damage that the sweet potatoes have experienced, those bruises will heal. And there is a compound called suberin that is formed. And once that is formed, it seals the wound. It doesn't allow any of the bacteria, fungi to enter and cause decay. So it enhances the storability of a sweet potato many folds.
All right, let's talk onions, because again, that's one of those things that hopefully you've grown more onions than you can use right in this moment, something that you'll be able to keep into the cold months. How do you store your onions?
Onions, again, the process starts with the right time when you harvest. You don't want to harvest the onions when they are not mature. So the indicator for you to know that, okay, the onions are ready to be harvested, if you look at the leaves, they would have fallen down, they would have turned brown. So that's a good indicator that the onions are mature and ready to be harvested. Once the onions are harvested, if you want to store them for a longer period of time, I would suggest curing them. And in the case of onions, a warm location, it could be a room, like a regular living room. But of course, dry conditions, well ventilated. You will notice that once you cure them for about 2 to 3 weeks, if you expose the onions to these conditions, the scales outside should become papery and thin. So that's a good indicator that the curing has done well. At the farm, what we typically do is when we harvest onions from outside, we would cure them under a high tunnel because we have that high temperature. Mm-hmm. It's dry because there is no rain. There is air movement, so no rotting. So that's an ideal place. And once that is done, you obviously need to clip the leaf about 1 inch above the onion. And that's, again, to provide some kind of a buffer so that no diseases or insect or pests, enter the bulb.
All right.
Once they are cut at that stage, the ideal temperature for them to be stored for a longer period of time is anywhere from 32 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit. They could be put in a mesh bag or maybe a crate. And again, these two, the mesh bag and the crate will allow air movement and could be, in a basement, again, dry location, a good air movement. That will be ideal for long-term storage.
All right. And we do need to take a break. But of course, if there are any other vegetables that you want to talk about storing this fall, you can call and ask Ajay about those. Richard Geron is going to join us in just a second as well. Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Geron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
I go out and pick me homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And of course, you can join the conversation as well with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to the phones. Bob is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I have a question regarding a Japanese maple, which I've had for about 15 years. I just noticed in the last week or so that some of the outer leaves are drying up, but the remainder of the plant still seems to be pretty alive and green. Could this be related to our dry conditions?
That would be my guess, that it's been extremely dry, that they like a moist, well-drained soil, and it's been extremely dry the last few weeks. So what I would do is go ahead and water it. Give it a nice, slow, deep watering.
Okay.
And maybe come back in another week or 10 days if it doesn't rain and do it again. Although they are forecasting about 1 to 2 inches of rain over much of Iowa over the next several days. So hopefully that happens.
As I have noticed on the plant that further inside on the same stem, the leaves still are very green, and the stem is green as well yet. So you think that it's related to their dry conditions?
Right. I've been noticing in central Iowa and Ames where some of the trees are starting to show signs of stress. It's been awfully dry for the last few weeks. It's been awfully warm. And when they're under stress, they typically show signs, and they'll develop kind of a off color, maybe some browning, that type of thing, indicating they are under stress.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Bob. And Richard, should a lot of us be thinking about checking in with trees, especially younger ones, to see if they need some water this time of year?
Definitely. If they've been planted, let's say, in the last 3 or 4 years, I would check them because they don't have the root system that a mature plant would have, and so they're going to suffer first. So what I would look for is maybe some curling of the foliage, maybe some wilting. Instead of a nice dark green color, maybe kind of a gray-green color, maybe some yellowing, maybe some browning at the edges. Those are signs of stress, water stress, and I would definitely go ahead and water them.
All right, and even though we had a little bit of rain in some parts of Iowa, things are still really dry out there, aren't they?
Definitely, especially in central and west central Iowa. West central Iowa isn't in an extreme drought. Central Iowa, like Story, Marshall, a severe drought. So we definitely need some rain.
All right. And Ajay, we've got some follow-up questions to our conversation about storing vegetables. Let's talk about harvesting Brussels sprouts.
Oh, great. Brussels sprout is one of those crops that has steadily getting more and more popular among homeowners, among commercial growers. There's a great market, especially for restaurants and all. Little challenging this year. But typically, Brussels sprout are long-duration crops. You typically plant Brussels sprout in the first week of June because the idea here is that they need to be exposed to the cold weather in order to develop the quality and the taste, the sweetness we are looking for. If you harvest Brussels sprout before they are exposed to frost, they might be okay, but they are not at the peak quality they are. So typically, these Brussels sprout cultivars and varieties take anywhere from 110, 120 days from planting. That's 4 months. And they can be sequentially harvested, which means, let's say you had your frost first week of October or mid-October, you can go after that, and you can just pick the sprouts at the bottom, which are bigger, about an inch in diameter, and you can successively just keep going every week and keep picking those sprouts. Alternatively, some folks like to see the entire stem of the Brussels sprout full with the sprout. That's another way we see them at the farmers markets too. So in that case, I would wait a little longer in order for the sprouts at the top portion of that stem to become to enlarge in size. Otherwise, the bottoms would be big and the tops would have smaller sizes. So in that case, I would wait maybe, you know, end of October. And you don't have to worry about frost damage on Brussels sprout. Brussels sprouts can take temperatures as low as 22, 23 degrees Fahrenheit. So we have a long window for harvest.
All right. And then if you want to store them, how do you store them?
These are very similar to the cold crops like broccoli, you know, cauliflower. If you want to store them, the ideal temperature would be anywhere from 32 to 36 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, refrigerator, but, you know, you don't have so much space to put inside. But otherwise, in the basement, in a cellar where it's dry, it's cool, there is some moisture relative humidity there so that they don't shrink that quickly.
All right. And someone else wants to ask, is there a danger of storing potatoes and onions too close together?
I think the question here is primarily to understand the difference between the climacteric and non-climacteric fruits. Some do ripen even after they are harvested, and they release ethylene, and that can either damage other crops or other produce around. I don't think so there is any issue with storing onions and potatoes together, but let's say if you store apples close to your onion, your carrots, you will see that the quality of those crops will go down because apples produce ethylene as they ripen, and that can damage the other crop.
All right. Here's a question from Karen in Des Moines, Richard. I want to renovate my lawn this fall. There are large patches of tall fescue that I killed, and I'd like to replace with fine fescue or bluegrass mix. Do I need to remove the dead grass before seeding, or can I just apply a half-inch top dressing of soil and compost and seed into that?
Well, you do have to get the seed into the soil by some means. One way maybe would be to simply rake it and kind of break the soil surface and then sow your seed and then very lightly rake the seed into the soil. But you do have to get very good seed-to-soil contact. And then after that, you have to keep it moist.
All right. What do you think about that top dressing idea?
It's possible. I think I would try the rake first or something of that nature.
Right.
Where if you've basically destroyed the grass, maybe just kind of, especially if we have a rain this coming week, next week, going out there a few days after that rain and kind of raking it with a kind of a garden type rake, that should kind of remove some of the debris, the dead debris, and then break the soil surface and then kind of rake the seed into the soil.
All right, let's go to the phones now. We've got Gerald on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Gerald.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I've got a sycamore tree. It's been in the ground about 6 years or so. It's about 18 to 20 feet tall. About a month ago, there's three branches on the bottom. They're fine, full of green. But a month ago, everything above that, the leaves turned and there ain't a leaf left on it. Is that tree viable for next year, or should I just get it out of there?
Well, I would wait until next spring and see what it does, just to make sure.
Okay.
That portion may have died, but I would wait to make sure. And so it should leaf out next spring. And if it doesn't, then you have to decide, is that something that I want to try to save, or do I want to replace it? But
yeah.
I would wait until
spring.
And then
I've got to follow. Okay. And then I want to plant some cedar trees. I know. Usually they recommend a lot of the evergreens plant in the spring. The cedars, are they hardy enough to go in the fall if you mulch around them good?
Well, do you intend to dig them up or actually buy them?
Well, buy potted.
Okay. If you intend to plant those, then I would do that fairly soon, within the next 2 or 3 weeks, because they retain their foliage and they need adequate time to develop a root system before winter. And
okay.
So if we plant them in November, if we have an early winter, they're just not going to have enough time, and they may be very susceptible to winter damage. So I would get them in the ground this month.
Okay. Thank you very much. Love the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Gerald. 866-780-9100 is the number. Sandy sent us this email. Ajay, she says, the past 2 years, my mom's strawberry plants have been destroyed in the spring by what appear to be a larvae. They are light green or white in color and range from less than an eighth of an inch to a half inch in length. The plants always look great until the end of May, when the leaves begin to be eaten and eventually nothing is left but shreds of the leaves. There isn't enough of the plant left to produce edible berries. I've tried both removing the larvae by hand and spraying the leaves with insecticidal soap, but it's a losing battle. The berry plants are in a raised bed and were planted 3 years ago. They were very healthy the first year. At this point, there are only a few plants still alive, and I'm considering removing all the vegetation, spraying the soil with something like malathion this fall, and planting annual flowers next spring. Can I try strawberry plants again in a year, or do you have other suggestions? This raised bed was specifically constructed for the purpose of growing strawberries, so my mom can pick them without having to stoop over and risk a fall.
Obviously, you know, some sort of insect here. I don't know if it's early in the spring. It would be, you know, cutworms that could damage a strawberry or some kind of a caterpillar. I'm not much aware of the insect pests on caterpillar. Richard, do you have any suggestions here?
Well, yeah, as far as treating the soil, that's not going to work. So that's not really an option.
Okay, don't spray it.
I think what I would do would be to maybe put in the annuals next year, and then the following year go back with strawberries. And if these insects come back again, to immediately have them identified so you know what to use as far as controlling them. Insecticidal soap typically will kill certain things like aphids and spider mites, but it typically won't kill larvae or caterpillars, so that's not going to work. So I would go with the annuals next spring and then try the strawberries the following year. And if the insect reappears, identify it immediately. You could send some photos to our entomology staff here at Iowa State. I'm sure they can identify it.
All right, great. Did you have something to add, Ajay?
Yeah, I just, there's another option. If they do not want to spray any insecticide, they can always use these floating row covers. These are like polypropylene material, which are light, and they can be just put over the plant, so it's kind of a mechanical barrier for the insect to get into. So many of our organic growers, especially cucurbit growers who grow cucumbers, squashes, they use these row covers as an integrated pest management tool.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Ralph is on the line in Waverly. Hi, Ralph.
Hello. Yes.
What's your question?
Thank you for taking my call. About 3 years ago, I planted raspberries, red, yellow, and purple, and the bushes are looking fine. The leaves are green, the stems are fine, but no raspberries.
Okay. Well, do you know what type they are as far as when do they normally bear?
Pardon me?
When do the plants normally bear? Do they bear in, let's say, mid-summer, in late summer, early fall?
More or less all summer. I planted the everbearing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what I would do, I think, on the everbearing is late next March, early April, on the everbearing types, I would cut the canes right back to the ground, completely back to the ground. You're giving up the early summer crop for the late summer, early fall crop, but I would cut them back to the ground, and I would also fertilize them. I would put on like a 10-10-10, just sprinkle that down the row, and then as the plants grow, if we have a dry period, go ahead and water them. They need about an inch of water per week, so if they have some fertilizer, if they have some water, then they should bear basically in late summer, early fall. As far as the purples, you wouldn't want to do that because they bear just in midsummer. So basically go out in late March, early April, and do some thinning where you take out the very spindly ones and leave the bigger ones. Go ahead and fertilize and also water them and see if they bear. Now, if they don't bear next year, despite very, very good care, then I would be inclined to rip them out because maybe they have a viral disease or something, and they're just not going to produce. And I would start over, and I would buy new plants and put them in a different location. But
okay,
I would see if good care next year gets you a crop.
All right. Good luck with that, Ralph. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's go next to Esther. Hi, Esther.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have Siberian iris that need to be divided. I'm wondering if I can do it this fall.
I would do it as soon as you can. The sooner the better. So if you can do it sometime, let's say next week, that would be great.
Great. And then what would be the best tool to use for that job?
What I would probably do is use a shovel or a spade, dig them up. And then if you have what they call a soil knife, then cut that clump into sections using that soil knife.
Great. And I could cut, they're just flopped over now, so I could just cut them way back before I do it, right?
Yeah, you can cut them back, the foliage, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's an email question quick before the break from Judy in Altoona. Richard, I lost an ornamental pear, roots and all, to the derecho. I'd like to plant a Colorado blue spruce in its place. My questions are, is it okay to plant in this drought yet this fall, or better to wait until spring? And does the ground need time to regain nutrients before I plant another tree in the same place?
Well, you can plant a tree nearby, let's say maybe 2 or 3 feet away from the old tree. And I might suggest maybe a concolor or white fir instead of a Colorado spruce. The concolor fir has fewer disease problems, but it still has kind of the bluish-green needles on it. And as far as planting it, yes, you can plant it this year, but if you want to do so, it should be done in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Otherwise, wait till spring.
All right. We will take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can join us with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And Becky is on the line next from Muscatine. Hi, Becky.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have planted probably about 12 to 15 years ago a hedge row of lilacs. And over the last probably 3 to 5 years, about July, the leaves start to get brown and then they drop and it looks like the lilacs are totally going dead. And then about this time, they start to sprout some new growth. Now, I've tried trimming them, doing the one-third method, and that didn't seem to help much. I've done some reading. I'm guessing I've got some type of fungus on them. And I guess my question is, should I do the severe pruning this winter, like March, where you trim them to 6 to 8 inches tall, and then when the leaves emerge, spray them with the fungicide? And if so, what type? Or should I just give up on them, pull them out, and put something else in? And if that's the answer, what would you recommend?
I don't think I'd give up on them. I think what I would do is try to rake up the fallen leaves as best I can. And then I would go out probably in late March, early April, and I would do some pruning where I would thin out some of the shoots. I would remove the larger, older stems near the ground, and that should provide greater air circulation and hopefully reduce the conditions favorable for disease, because most fungal leaf spots, which I think this has or they have, most of those require a fairly damp environment or closed environment, so some pruning should help. I would try that and hopefully not have to resort to a fungicide. I'm not sure exactly which fungicide would actually work. You could try something like chlorothalonil. Those products are widely available. That's the active ingredient. And the actual product names are things like Funginil, Daconil. Those products contain chlorothalonil. That's kind of an all-purpose type garden fungicide, but I would definitely do the pruning and the raking. I think sanitation is important, and also getting very good air circulation is important.
Okay, so then maybe the problem is the location, because they are in front of a short cement wall for a former feedlot.
Okay, so that may affect it, yes, where because of that structure or whatever, we're not getting the air circulation that would be helpful. But I would still do the thinning, because that helps, whether or not too crowded, where you get better air movement.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Becky. Next up, Marianne in Carroll County. Hello, Marianne.
Good morning. I have old-fashioned peony that had a beautiful bloom this spring. We had adequate moisture, but they've had a horrid summer. They started to kind of droop from the stems about a couple of inches above the ground, and I've been watering faithfully. Well, we got the derecho, the hail, high winds, and they're really kind of bent over, not quite snapped off, about 2 inches above the ground. I usually wait until after a hard frost before I cut these perennials off. But do they need the leaf structure yet for photosynthesis for the roots, or can I just clean up these beds? They're not crowded. They have lots of root space.
Well, if the leaves are still green, okay, if they are, they're still functioning, they're still benefiting the plant, so I would leave it. It may not look attractive, but as long as they're still functioning, I would keep them. And I would cut them back at the earliest, maybe early October. In the meantime, if we don't have rain, I would go ahead and keep watering them once a week or so, and that should help them. And so, no, leave that foliage because it is benefiting the plant.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Marianne. And let's go back to some email questions. Here's one for you, Ajay, from Mark. He says, my red onions are small this year. I'm trying to figure out why. My first guess is that because of the high winds we had in June, they toppled over and that stunted their growth. The second thought is that the soil needed extra fertilizer due to the leaching from the spring rains. They did receive two treatments of 10-10-10 granular fertilizer about 60 days apart. Did they stop growing once they're bent over? Ajay, what do you think?
So I think Mark identified it correctly. I think this is more of a nutritional problem. Onions need anywhere from, 90 to 100 pounds per acre of nitrogen. And oftentimes, since they are quick growing and during the season, we don't pay much attention. So I think Mark might need to up the rate of fertilizer he's applying. And the spacing of the onion, that can also dictate the size. If you're planting them too close, you will get smaller bulbs. You might want to look in the spacing. Typically, onions are spaced about 4 inches between them, and there are many rows. Each row is about 6 to 8 inches farther apart. So spacing and fertilization is what I think largely dictates the size of the bulb.
All right. And another vegetable question for you, Ajay, from Marcy. My Japanese eggplants are prolific this year, but I'm having trouble storing them. Even after a day or two, they wrinkle and lose their beautiful luster. I've tried room temperature storage, refrigerated, and refrigerated in a plastic bag to conserve moisture. Any suggestions?
Eggplants, the center of origin for eggplant is actually from India and China, that area. These are, heat-loving crops, like any other solanaceous crop. The best thing would be to harvest and try to keep them in the refrigerator or in a cooler place so that you can have it for a little longer. But to store them for a longer period of time, it's a challenge because it will lose moisture very quickly. It will shrivel. So my advice would be to, try to consume it quickly or leave it in the refrigerator, and that way it can store there for about a week or so.
All right. And let's go back to the phones. Marilyn is on the line in Perry. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi. I have several amaryllis that I saved after Christmas last year, and this spring I put them outside in the pots, and I'm wondering if now is the time to bring them in and cut off the foliage and put them in the refrigerator for a couple of months and try to get them to bloom again.
Well, I would probably bring them inside probably around the mid part of September. So leave them outside a little bit longer and then bring them inside. And when you bring them inside, put them in a cooler room in the house, kind of semi-dark. Mm-hmm. And I would actually tip the pot on its side. Okay, and leave the foliage as is, but stop watering. Don't water at all, and eventually that will force the bulbs to go dormant. And when they do, the foliage will turn brown and die, at which point you can cut off the dead foliage. And for them to bloom, what they need is once they go dormant, they need a period where they're exposed to temperatures around 50 to 55. Because that initiates flower development in the actual bulb. So 50 to 55 for 8 weeks, eight straight weeks. So if you have maybe a partially heated porch, or maybe you have an unused bedroom that's quite cool, put them there, leave them there for at least 8 weeks. And then at that point, you can move them back to a warmer area, start to water, and hopefully they'll grow back and bloom.
All right. Good luck with that, Marilyn. It's quite the project to take on. Let's go to Cynthia now in Des Moines. Hi, Cynthia.
Good morning. A couple years ago, well, actually, it's been, I believe, four, I got some London plane trees, and they're like 20 feet tall or more, and but they kind of Y off after they get up about 10, 15 feet. During the Del Greco, one of the larger limbs in that Y, it's like it just got twisted off, almost like it just shattered. And of course, I took that down, but I'm trying to figure out, it's a like a pear shape, smaller at the top, and then the branches go to the ground. Will that fill in, or I know nothing about plane trees, or okay. London plane trees.
It's basically a type of sycamore is what it is. So if you've lost the one Y, if the trunk itself is still basically structurally sound, if that one branch, the one Y that's still there, if that is structurally sound, it will keep on growing. The tree may be a little bit lopsided for the rest of its life. But if the trunk itself is solid, if that branch itself is solid, it'll keep on growing, and maybe a little bit lopsided, but it may be a very nice tree.
Okay. I was hoping that it would sort of move itself over towards the light.
No, it can't really do that, but branches may kind of grow back in that direction from the other branch, but it's probably not going to be a picture-perfect-looking tree. But it doesn't have to be either.
No, it's a shade. It's shade for my house, so I think that's great. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Cynthia. And next up, let's go to Betty in Des Moines with another tree question. Hi, Betty.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for allowing me to speak. We have a grandson, 30 years old. He's a playwright. And last December, he gave my husband one of the gifts, The Overstory, a novel by Richard Powers, about trees.
Mm-hmm.
So for his birthday, we told him we will plant a tree in our backyard, and we want to know what's his best. We were thinking of an apple tree and what type, a cherry tree or a peach, because I saw a beautiful peach tree in Pella with lots of peaches. I didn't know Iowa grows peaches. And if you could kindly advise what kind of trees and what kind of a tree, and whether it should be grafted or really buy it, and where should we buy it, and when is the time to plant it?
All right. Great question.
Okay,
questions,
as far
Betty.
As a choice between an apple, cherry, and a peach, I would probably suggest a cherry, a tart cherry or pie cherry. And I say that because peach trees in central Iowa tend to be kind of iffy as far as being cold hardy. And oftentimes peach trees will die within like 10 years or so. We'll have a hard winter and they will simply not survive the winter very well. So I would be inclined to go with a cherry. As far as the apples tend to be high maintenance, that if you don't spray them on a regular basis, we tend to see a lot of insect damage. And in some cases, the damage is so severe, the apples are not edible. So I would go with a cherry. They're lower maintenance, and they're actually very, very attractive trees. They tend to be very symmetrical, and they have the white flowers in the spring, and then you have the edible cherries. As far as the varieties, the ones that are most common are North Star and Meteor. Those are very common cultivars or varieties. They are semi-dwarf or dwarf. They're produced by budding or grafting. And so these trees will get to be maybe 10 or 15 feet tall and 10 or 15 feet wide. So kind of a rounded tree. I think they're very attractive trees.
All right. And does she need more than one cherry for pollination?
Tart cherries are self-fruitful. One Great. Is perfectly fine. She's good.
So that sounds like the perfect decision. Betty, thank you so much for your call. And I think we've got time for one more call. Rusty is on the line in Lone Tree. Hi, Rusty.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I planted a catapa tree about 10 years ago. And this year, I was waiting for it to leaf out and everything. Last year, it was fine. Had leaves and pods and flowers, everything. This year, not a thing. It's as bare as can be. Hmm. It's about 10 years old, and it's about 30 feet tall.
Well, it's obviously dead. It didn't leaf out.
It's dead.
And I'm not sure why, because we didn't have a particularly bad winter. So I'm not sure why.
We had snow right before it should have leafed out. We had a snowfall here in Johnson County. But,
but that shouldn't have killed it. What that might have done, it might have basically kind of set it back
mm-hmm.
where it would leaf out again, but it shouldn't have killed it. So I'm not sure exactly what the problem was. But
I don't see
it
anything
died.
On it. I don't see any insect damage or, limbs, holes, or anything like that that's missing. It was perfect last year, but this year is deader than dead.
Yeah. When you have a pest problem like insects or disease, typically you start to see symptoms during the growing season,
mm-hmm.
like in July or August. You start to see dieback. And if something doesn't survive the winter, then you assume winter injury. But we didn't have a really bad winter, so I'm not sure exactly what the problem was.
I was thinking about, getting rid of this and maybe getting another because I like the flowers and the pods,
Right. If it's totally bare, it's dead, and I'd cut it down and plant another tree maybe 3 or 4 feet away.
All right. Rusty, thank you so much for your call. Let's squeeze in this question. Richard from Leanne, when is the best time to divide sedums, and how would I do that quickly?
I would do it early in the spring.
All right, so wait.
Just dig it up and divide it.
Right, and if you need more details, you can ask again in the spring. Richard Geron, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Ajay Nair, thank you for being here.
You're welcome, Charity.
Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And of course, we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Dennis Reese, Matt Alvarez, and Rick Brewer. You can get in touch with us anytime. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And you never need to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.